Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to the show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Awfully glad you're with me today. Bill Arnold here. And just so you know, past performance is no indicator of future results. It's kind of my motto here. I have Rebecca Maxwell in studio. Rebecca, how are you today?
Doing very well. So far staying cool anyway.
Yes, it's a hot one out there today. So I love this verse, Ephesians 6:13. Talked about this morning at my Bible study. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. And we focused on those words, to stand. Because usually in battle, the person that is standing is the person that's won. Because the person that lost is usually laying on the ground quite dead. So I thought, how cool in this verse that after you have done everything, you are still standing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the protection we have when we put on the full armor of God.
And that it's not up to us necessarily, that ultimately that's all we need. And someone might think, well, shouldn't I be like delivering a cheer or a shout or brandishing the sword in victory? I'm like, no, all we need is just to stand. He'll do the fighting for us. And that's his guarantee, is that at the end, well, having done all, to stand.
That's a smart comment. That's why I pay you the big money.
Once per day.
Once per day. That's all I ask. All right. We have a great hour coming up. Dr. Alex McFarland is already on our studio line, so we're going to bring him on in just a minute. And then Dr. Krish Kandaya is going to be with us as well in this hour. So you're going to have a spectacular hour of radio. And awfully glad you're with me today. We're going to take a little break and then bring on Alex. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Be back in a minute.
This is Liz Curtis Higgs. If you have dreams of seeing your name on a bookstore shelf but have no idea how to make it a reality, consider attending the upcoming Northwestern Christian Writers Conference at University of Northwestern. It's an amazing opportunity to gain insights from published authors and industry professionals and to be encouraged by a wonderful community of Christian writers and publishers.
Don't wait. Registration closes July 5th. Sign up today at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com.
Dig deep into God's Word with the new CSB Study Bible for Women. Learn about biblical womanhood through articles. Read about each woman in the Bible with a comprehensive concordance. Use the included word studies to expand your understanding of the original biblical language and so much more. This beautiful hardcover Bible will help you enjoy God each day as you spend time in His Word. We're giving away one CSB Study Bible for Women each week. Visit myfaithradio.com to enter to win.
It is 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. Alex McFarland is a religion and culture expert. He's really known throughout America. He serves as the director of the Christian Worldview and Apologetics at the Christian Worldview Center of North Greenville University. He's also a co-host of the American Family Radio Talk Network's Exploring the Word talk show, which he just ended like 5 minutes ago. He gets off the air and comes on with me. This is why I love Alex. Alex, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm also a big, big fan of Bill Arnold.
Ah,
so
you're
it's great
me.
To be on.
Thank you so much. And now, this is the first time we've had a conversation in the afternoon. Usually, we talk in the morning. So, I don't know what it's going to be like for you to have me fully awake.
Well, me. And let me say, you've been so good to me. We've been friends for a couple of years, and you've had me on many times. And you've been so gracious to me. For one thing, you know, depending on what time zone I'm in, traveling, speaking, you know, I look back and all the times I was on the morning show, I hope I was coherent. The other thing was, I've got this really handy dandy device called a Comrex, C-O-M-R-E-X, a Comrex.
I know it well.
Like, yeah. And most of the morning shows, I was on a phone and oftentimes a cell phone with horrible reception.
At the airport.
I know, airports. And, you know, because, you know, by God's grace.
Flight 21 for New York, not leaving.
Exactly. I would be in some noisy place and, you know, I speak about 150, 175 nights a year. I love it. God called me to it. I travel. I speak. But I would always be in like some noisy airport or in a tunnel with no signal.
Yeah.
And you were always so patient, and I thank you. So to be on in the afternoon and on the digital machine, it's very cool, isn't it?
It's unbelievable because it feels like you're sitting in the studio with me, which I absolutely love.
Well, maybe someday I'll get to do that.
I would look forward to that. All right, Alex, let me talk about what's happening now that Justice Kennedy is going to be resigning. We all need to be, as Christians, praying fervently about the next Supreme Court pick.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I heard through the grapevine that a group of Democrat strategists with Rachel Maddow and different ones were on a call, and several people were trolling their computers, you know, as we all do, looking for news and this and that. And it came across, you know, 2 days ago that Justice Kennedy was going to retire. And they said two of the people at the table literally screamed out loud.
Oh, wow.
Because they were like, ah, you know, with the appointment of Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch, a fine person, you know, that replaced Scalia. You know, Antonin Scalia, the late, great Antonin Scalia, was a solid conservative. Kennedy was pretty conservative, but, you know, with things like he cast the deciding vote to keep Obamacare, you couldn't be sure. I mean, he was pretty much conservative, but sometimes not. The reason that Democrat strategists would scream is because they know that if this appointment is successfully confirmed and it's a person in the mold of Neil Gorsuch, I mean, the makeup of the court will be conservative, constitutional, for the rest of our lifetimes, probably.
Mm.
And the other thing is this, and this is why, and let me just say that I know there were a lot of people, a lot of Christian people, that were dubious of candidate Trump. And I will say, you know, that I'll tell you, Bill, I got a lot of friends that criticized me in, you know, late 2015, early 2016, when I said, hey, if this guy's the nominee, Christians ought to vote for him. And people were like, oh, you know, that's a, you know, it's a Faustian deal and all that. No. Part of the I think President Trump is doing a great job, and I thank God for Vice President Mike Pence. But I want to say this, that a lot of us two and a half years ago, we were saying, look, the next president will appoint two and maybe three Supreme Court justices, because no doubt the next person very likely will be Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has been solidly liberal, and her time on the court is fast drawing to a close because she's getting rather elderly. So with, you know, the replacement of Kennedy and then ultimately coming up on, you know, the next appointment, this is why the stakes were so high in the 2016 presidential election. I mean, and I'm hopeful because I think God is really at work, not only in things like religious freedom and marriage and the sanctity of life. But, Bill, I don't think I'm being over the top to say this was about the preservation of the U.S. Constitution.
Wow. Wow. Now, Alex, when the president makes a nomination, what is he up against right now as far as getting a confirmation?
Well, I think probably the most formidable obstacle is going to be just the noise, the power of the press, you know, and just the people. And now, you know, Hillary Clinton is in the news, and even former President Barack Obama, and everybody's saying that, oh, my goodness, this is the end of our republic, and, oh, it's going to be, you know, this Trump, you know, banana republic. I mean, people are using all sorts of over-the-top, you know, pejoratives. The what's happening, and I know it sounds like a change, what's happening is the American Republic is being restored. We're getting back, God willing, to an America where the law is upheld, the moral law is the basis of our judiciary. Things like having responsible immigration policies and the law is upheld regarding immigration and the border, You know, I remember in one of the debates, then candidate Trump was talking with Hillary Clinton, who was advocating essentially for an open borders policy. And Trump, the candidate, said, look, either we have a country or we don't. So I think one of the big obstacles, although it's definitely overcomable, and here's the key, and folks, be in prayer, the key is going to be how John McCain votes. And, you know, McCain, I pray, and I'm sorry he has cancer, and I have prayed for him and do pray for him, and I wish him God's best. But, you know, McCain has been kind of Dr. No when it comes to Trump. And I hope that McCain will end, because, you know, this is certainly going to be one of the he's definitely coming to the end of his tenure in public service. I'm hoping that, you know, things like there won't be obstruction from within the Republican Party. My goodness, Republicans, this is the time to pull together. So there's going to be the noise of the press. There's going to be pop media people that are completely irrelevant, like the actor John Cusack, who about 2 weeks ago was calling for insurrection and riot in the streets. You know, we have to riot in the streets. Michael Moore, filmmaker Michael Moore, was on the Colbert Show and was saying that we have to, you know, lay down our lives and die to stop President Trump. You know, that's silly. And folks, please, and I love people. I'm a Christian. I'm a preacher. I love people. But remember, the Hollywood, the actors, the actresses, these are people who pretend for a living, okay? So they're up in their ivory tower of libertine Hollywood. Back those of us that have to work a job, make a payroll, tell the truth, live morally, live within our means, we know that you can't have a world with no borders. You can't have a world with unlimited, you know, free money, free tuition, free health care. Somebody's got to pay the bills. And I'm thankful, Bill. I think that God-fearing, tax-paying Americans finally are seeing a country saved that was basically going to turn into a socialist utopia.
Mm. All right, we're going to take a little break. If you want to jump into the conversation, you have a question or a comment for Alex, feel free to call 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Take a short break and be right back. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Don't turn that music down quite yet. There we go. I know Alex will love this. A little guitar work by Eric Clapton.
That's great.
I figured that would work for you. All right, we're back.
Hey, did my ears serve me correctly earlier in the show? You had a Lindsey Buckingham cut.
We did, yeah. Nice. You're the first person that's recognized that.
Yeah, what's the name of that song?
Never Going Back Again.
Exactly. I thought that. Never Going Back Again.
Yeah.
See, folks, by the way, as an aside, Bill Arnell and I, we love music.
We love music.
And do you know what? Okay, let's just get this out. I am 2 years late going into the studio, and I'm going to record something that's going to be some bumper music for you.
Yes, and which I want, and I've asked for. So
now, do you play guitar, Bill?
I play five-string banjo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever had on the show Timothy George of the Beast? Not the Beast and Divinity School, but he was a great friend of Chuck Colson.
No, I haven't.
George,
I know the name,
scholar.
Though.
Well, you know what? He's a great scholar, and there was a thing a few years ago called the Manhattan Declaration. Chuck Colson and about 35 leaders met in New York City. Ravi Zacharias, Tim Keller, I was there. I think Franklin Graham was there. A lot of people, and we wrote this position paper on three things: religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and the nature of marriage. It was called the Manhattan Declaration. And Timothy George was there, and great scholar. And so I said, I want you to come speak in North Carolina, my home state. So we brought him down here, and he gave a great series of lectures. Well, he asked if I had ever heard of Doc Watts.
Oh, my. He asked you that.
Yeah, and I said, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we ended up jamming on guitar for hours on end.
Oh,
and
fun.
Here's this Ivy League scholar and we were playing songs, you know, like Black Mountain Rag and, you know, Wreck of the Old 97. But so you, tell me what you play on five-string banjo.
Well, I play primarily a bluegrass style, Earl Scruggs kind of stuff. And I love playing five-string banjo because I like privacy. Because when I start playing banjo, I get it.
Yeah.
Everyone leaves. Okay. Yeah, everyone leaves.
No, I bet. So who were some of your big influences?
Well, you know, Scruggs was my biggest influence. You know, oddly, I was inspired by Steve Martin as well as a banjo player.
Okay, sure.
Who's an exceptional banjo player.
Indeed.
And now I love Noam Pikelny, and I don't know if you know him.
No.
Yeah.
How about, it'll come to me here in a minute.
Yeah.
Bela Fleck.
Oh, my gosh. He's amazing. Yeah, he's absolutely amazing.
When I was in college in UNCG, University of North Carolina at Greensboro, this was back in the 80s, Bela Fleck, and everybody listening is like, who are they talking about? But, you know, some amazing music. We used to go see them all the time. He would play a lot of times open-air concerts. And I didn't know who he was. I just mentioned Bela Fleck. I was in Nashville a couple of years ago, and I mean, that guy has an amazing following, doesn't he?
Oh, it's a huge, huge following.
Yeah, and hasn't he probably been nominated for Grammys before?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Alex, I got lots of callers popped on the
line.
Okay, sure. Let's have Eric join into our conversation. Eric from St. Paul. Hi, Eric.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just want to hear your guys' thoughts on a biblical approach to some of the news around the border and the separation of families and children. And I just think of Jesus' words talking about the least of these. And, maybe a biblical approach to that situation. And because I always want to put the word before hard and fast political parties. So if you could just speak into that.
Great question, and God bless you. And you know, in your heart, I can hear your voice, and I'm with you, brother. I mean, we, you know, the Word of God talks to Israel about the treatment of strangers, and Jesus in the Gospels talked about, you know, suffer the little children, forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Let me say this, that obviously none of us want children harmed, and pain introduced into people's lives and families separated and things like that. But when it comes to the Word of God, I think about Romans chapter 13, 1 through 7, where it says basically God sanctions good civil government. And 1 Timothy 2 talks about praying for kings and for those in authority that we may lead a peaceable life in all godliness. Now, a lot of people, like the filmmaker Michael Moore, have said, well, wait a minute, you evangelicals, you know, I thought we're supposed to feed the poor. I thought we're supposed to care for the stranger. And you want, you know, a border wall. And you want immigration policies that vet out people from foreign countries. And how can you be for a travel ban from Muslim, you know, terrorist nations when I thought you Christians are supposed to, you know, love the stranger? Here's the thing. What a lot of the people like that are doing, they are taking verses that God gave to the nation of Israel and to the church and applying them to government. The feeding of the stranger and the care, while obviously the government should never be abusive to people, but really benevolence is really given to individuals, churches, and in the case of the Old Testament, the nation of Israel. Honestly, like the 1 Timothy 2, pray for kings and for those in authority that we may live a peaceable life in all godliness, is basically saying that God gives good civil government so that we can have a culture most conducive to the spread of the gospel. Romans 13 really says that the powers that be, the government, is a minister of God. So two things I want to say to that we can't expect the government to be what God is calling the church and the individual to be. The other thing that I would say is that honestly, in the long run, the most moral thing the most, frankly, humane thing that the government can do is to cause nations, and I know South America, so many people come here and try to come illegally, and really that ultimately the rights and the security of, you know, either natural-born legal citizens, tax-paying citizens is undermined. Honestly, the most moral thing that our government can do in the long run is to send a message to would-be illegals that this is not going to work. Don't put yourselves and your family and your children at risk by coming into what is a no-win proposition. And also, I would say this, to countries like Mexico that get they get subsidies from us. I don't know if I don't know how it can be done. I have some ideas about how it could be done, but the Mexican government and South American countries have got to help instill a culture of lawfulness in their people, because they need to say, look, do not try to get into America illegally because it's not going to work. So I realize it takes a little bit of heavy lifting to process all this from a Christian standpoint.
I appreciate the call, Eric. I've got a running out of time here, Alex, and I got a bunch of other callers. Let me ask you one more, if you don't mind. I got a caller, Dale from Fargo. He said, Alex mentioned that President Trump was appointed for such a time as this, but here's where I'm having a hard time. Can he speak to the kind of rhetoric and words he uses in all of his tweets and such that doesn't seem to be honorable?
Great question. You know, I could do without two-thirds of the tweets myself. you know, I support for many of his policies that have been good does not necessarily constitute endorsement of all the tweets. Let me say this. The late Charles Krauthammer, who just passed away, who was a really good thinker, the president said something about Krauthammer wrote a book, and it's a good book, and he was a great public intellectual. And the president used a word that I never, ever, ever, ever use, never would use, don't use. And, you know, I kind of groan. I'm sorry that sometimes the rhetoric and the candor is not what would be used in polite company, and I will freely admit that. But at the same time, I do think praise is due, you know, where it's due. He is going to be, already, he is the most pro-life president of our lifetime, as much as I love and revere Ronald Reagan. If he can successfully appoint another conservative constitutionalist like Gorsuch, this will be the most consequential, most important presidency of our lifetime.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for being on the show. I love this Comrex. It's like you're in the studio. Let's do this again soon.
Hey, God bless the Bill Ornell Show.
God
great
bless
to be on.
You. Thanks, Alex. Alex McFarland has been my guest. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Well, this one was closer than it should have been. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that pro-life pregnancy care centers in California don't have to post notices advertising abortion services funded by the state. The Ninth Circuit had previously upheld the California law that required pregnancy care centers to promote abortion. But Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for the majority, definitively reversed the Ninth Circuit's decision. It's an important win for free speech and another major success for the Alliance Defending Freedom. You know, that hate group, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Still, it could have gone differently without Justice Neil Gorsuch on the bench. It shows how vital groups like ADF are to maintaining our freedom and confronting bad laws, and also that elections have consequences. So Christians stay involved, especially in important work like the Pregnancy Care Center movement, and pray for our nation's heart, soul, and culture. One Supreme Court win, especially one this close, is a reprieve, not a final victory. I'm John Stone Street.
Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me on this roasting hot day. I have on our studio line Krish Kandaya. He is the founder and director of Home for Good. It's a UK charity finding homes for foster children and young refugees. He is also was the president of London School of Theology and also on the faculty at Oxford University. He's with me today. We've had him on the show before. I'm absolutely delighted to have him back. Hello, Krish.
Hi, Dr. Bill. Lovely to be with you.
So much. I'm not a doctor, but I'll take it. Anytime I get recognized as a person with a higher intelligence level than what I actually have, I'm flattered.
So, that's great. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, I have to say, I watched your recent TED video, and I'm going to get our listeners pointed in the right direction to see this. And if I'm going to use a baseball analogy, because I like baseball, this home run was in the upper third deck. I have not been so moved by a 16-minute video in a long time.
Oh, that's so encouraging. I was very nervous when I was giving that. So you're not allowed any notes, and you're in front of a crowd of 2,000 people in Oxford. But, God was with us. So thank you for your encouragement.
Well, what I really want to do is have you share some of the story with my listeners. We're not going to go all 16 minutes, but talk about, if you would, the call you get at 4:45 in the afternoon on Friday.
So my family got a call at 4:45 on a Friday afternoon, and that's a dangerous time to receive a call from social services, because it probably means the office is going to close in 15 minutes and they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to us, Krish, and my wife Miriam was also on the call, they said, you know, well, we know you've already got a foster child with you, but could you take another one? And my wife is totally up for this, but I'm a little bit nervous. And so I say, okay, just tell me something about the child. And they said, well, we can't tell you much. All we can tell you is he's a biter. And that is not what anyone wants to hear. A biter. You know, what does he bite? Does he bite stuff, like furniture? I could cope with that. Mm-hmm. Our furniture's got teeth marks on it already, right? From
right.
This cat.
Yeah, of course.
But if he bites people, I've got problems, because we've got six other children in the house already that we love and we need to look after. And I don't know where this child has been. I don't know what he's been exposed to. And so is it going to be safe for me to bring this biter boy into my house? And then God really challenged me about that on the call, to say, look, biter is an inadequate description of a human person. You and I, we are more than the worst thing that we've ever done, and we're more than the worst thing that's ever been done to us. When God looks at us, he sees people made in his image. People that are fearfully and wonderfully made, whatever our history, whatever our background, whatever our family circumstances. And so as a Christian, I needed to respond in love to this boy. He needed help and a home. And he came into our lives, and he turned it upside down in all the best ways. He was 3 years old, and he'd already had 8 different families. So that's probably enough reason why someone might bite, just to let the world know that he's there. Mm. He had speech delay, and so he struggled to communicate. But just having him in our lives was such a blessing. It really brought us closer to God as we were able to show love to this lad. And he was just a wonderful thing, a wonderful person. And he bit a lot when he was with us, mostly sausages and no people.
Just when you tell this story, Krish, I literally tear up. And now I didn't know the detail if he had been in 8 homes already by age 3. But I'm just trying to place myself in a similar situation, where if I got a call from my neighbor at 4:45 on a Friday asking me if I'd cut his lawn, I'd say no. Seriously, I would go, nah, I can't. I can't tonight. And you're sitting there facing a weekend, and you're being asked to bring a child into your home who has been in 8 previous homes and is a biter. And if this isn't the hand of God at work, I don't know what is.
Well, we were really convicted as a family. And, you know, it's part of the reason we wrote this book, God is Stranger, that we're going to talk about later. But,
yes. You
know, one of the verses that really spoke to us was in James chapter 1, verse 27, where the writer says, true religion that God our Father accepts as pure and blameless is to care for widows and orphans in their distress.
Mm-hmm.
And so this little boy was in distress. He was in need. And our worship of God is demonstrated by how we relate to those people that are made in his image, particularly the vulnerable. And, you know, that's really spoken to us. And a lot of people think it's a burden or it's a lot of work. And it is really tough. And my wife, particularly as the primary carer, in our household, because I'm often out and about. I'm in Ireland at the moment. She's got a house full of kids to kind of look after. So my wife's the hero in our family for sure. But it has been an honor and a joy to care for these children, and it has helped us to know and love God better.
And I do want to confirm in with you that I don't use the word hero very often, but I am using it for you and your wife, because that I was so moved by what you have done. And really, you guys are both heroes, in my opinion. So thank you for leading through incredible example.
Oh, it's very kind, Bill. Very kind. But in the U.S. at the moment, right now, there are 100,000 children that are waiting to be adopted in the foster care system. Many of them have stories similar to the little boy that I just told you about. They're not babies. They're older kids. You don't actually have to travel halfway around the world to find need. Right on our doorsteps, in every city in America, there are kids waiting to be adopted, and they are. It doesn't cost money to adopt them. The government will pay for the process for you to help adopt those children. And, you know, that's what my wife and I and the charity that we founded and the people that work with us and our supporters, that's our vision. We want to give a home to every child that needs one. And our mission field particularly is the UK. Everything kids in the UK care system. But we love to partner with friends over the sea in America because there's a massive need there too.
Mm-hmm. And now, Chris, your book, God is Stranger, Finding God in Unexpected Places. I think a good teacher will always ask hard questions, and I think you've done this spectacularly. And this book challenges us as to how we interact with strangers. You know, I think our minds expect God to work in a very logical way. He doesn't work that way, does he?
No, he doesn't. Well, this book, God is Stranger, is a follow-up to my book, Paradoxology, which we spoke about before, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And in Paradoxology, I was looking at why Christianity is never meant to be simple. There are really complex paradoxes in Scripture. And I kind of carry on that theme in God is Stranger by looking at the really strange parts of the Bible, particularly when God turned up in disguise, incognito. So think about Abraham in his tent, and then suddenly there are three visitors at his tent door. And we know this is God. Somehow, mysteriously, God and angels, or perhaps a visitation of the Trinity, it's not quite clear. But God has turned up. But Abraham doesn't know that it's God. He just sees three strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And in our culture, we have stranger danger. We have xenophobia, fear of the stranger. And you know, he would have been turned away from many of our homes, wouldn't he? The stranger that is God would have been turned away because we don't open the door to people that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God that Abraham didn't behave like that. Abraham welcomes these three in, and he treats them like royalty. He goes and kills a calf. Now, I've been in the U.S. recently, and I know you like your meat and you like your barbecue, but a whole
yes,
calf
we do.
For three guests, that's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cholesterol.
Right.
So he's just going above and beyond to show incredible hospitality. And you know what? When he discovers that God has been in his home, he does not need to be embarrassed because he has treated these strangers as if they were royalty, as if maybe they were God himself. And I think that's a real challenge to us in our culture right now. How do we treat our neighbors, let alone strangers? But we are called to love strangers as if we were showing love to God himself. And that's a real challenge to us. I know there's some big political issues that are going on and borders of America right now, lots of news going on about children being separated from their families. Does it change the conversation if we think God is a stranger that needs welcome and welcome into our lives and welcome into our homes?
Mm-hmm. Chris, is it safe to say that from our earliest age, we were told by our parents not to talk to strangers?
We were. And you know, we're told it in those stories that we read to our children. You know, Little Red Riding Hood, she's got to be careful, hasn't she?
Yeah.
The three bears are scared of their stranger that turns up, that's Goldilocks. You know, there is. It's right built in. But you know what, Bill? Statistically, this is true in America as it is in the UK. Sadly, you're more likely to be harmed by someone you know, mm-hmm, than by a stranger. sadly, more violence, more sexual violence as well, happens from people you know than from strangers. So we've built into our mindset that we need to be fearful about other people. And, you know, Jesus is continually unlocking that. You know, we could, in the book, I go through a whole bunch of stories in the Old Testament, not just Abraham, but, you know, what about Lot and the angelic visitors that end up sheltering in his house? And then the whole city comes out to attack and sexually violate the people in his house. Mm. And then Lot bizarrely offers his own daughters as substitute for that. That's a mind-bendingly difficult passage of scripture. And I confront it head on in the book. But if you go into the New Testament, you know, Jesus tells this incredible parable of the Good Samaritan. There was stranger danger, wasn't it? Two people walk past this stranger and hurt by the side of the road. But Jesus commends the Samaritan who stops and helps. And the Samaritan, that's the key, isn't it? The Samaritan mm-hmm. was the wrong race, the wrong group. He would have, if it was been a Samaritan by the side of the road and a Jewish person had been walking down, they would have been scared to go over and touch him for fear of being ceremonially unclean. Mm. But Jesus uses a stranger, a Samaritan, as a model of how to show hospitality and grace.
Yeah.
So you're right. The Bible needs to deprogram us from some of those early incepted ideas that we've had put into us.
Chris, I do not want to interrupt you for even a second, but I do need to take a short break. When we come back, more with Chris Candia in just a minute.
Pray Together Sunday is a simple opportunity for churches to join with congregations across America to ask God for spiritual renewal in our country. Ask your church to join us for Pray Together Sunday on July 8th and commit to a time of prayer for our country during your church's Sunday worship service. Together, we will lift our voices on behalf of our communities and nation. Register and find resources for your church at nae.net/praytogether. Pray Together Sunday on July 8th is organized by the National Association of Evangelicals, where we use influence for good.
Back to the show. I have on our studio line Chris Candia. He is a founder and director of Home for Good, a UK charity finding homes for foster children and young refugees. He's also was the president of the London School of Theology and also on the faculty at Oxford University. So we're talking today about his book, God is Stranger, Finding God in Unexpected Places. And Chris, I want to ask you, is God the author of the pain in our lives?
Oh, wow. That's a really tough question, Bill. I think sometimes God allows pretty difficult things to happen to us. And is it fair to say that he's the author? He's never the author of evil, but sometimes he does allow us to experience pain. And mm-hmm. obviously the book of Job is a classic example of that we're giving in the scriptures. And the weird thing about the book of Job, I deal with this in my book, Paradoxology, particularly, is that Job never gets given a full answer for why he has suffered. But he has developed a trust in the goodness of God despite the experience of pain and suffering. It would have been so easy to give him an apologetic textbook and said, here you go, here's how you answer the problem of suffering. But actually, Job is never given an answer and is asked to trust God despite his suffering.
Well, I appreciate that. It's your book, because you do tackle the hard issues, these really don't turn out to be soft, cuddly bedtime stories, do they?
No. I mean, I remember as a young person, I was given my first Bible, and it was a lovely Bible. It had red ink around the outside of the page, and so I think that was so that my auntie could see which bits of the Bible I'd been reading, because the red bits would get rubbed off. And I was given a highlighter pen at the same time as I received this Bible. And I always wondered, what was I supposed to do with the highlighter pen? Was I supposed to mark God's word and tell him which bit he got right? You know, that's a good bit, God. That's a good, I'll leave that unhighlighted. And for me, we sometimes highlight the bits that suit us, the bits that make us feel better about ourselves. And it's not wrong to have a favorite part of the Bible, but you've got to ask yourself, what about those unhighlighted bits? Are they a no-go area for us? And, you know, have we distorted our picture of God by selecting certain bits of his character, certain bits of the story that suit us? And that's what I'm trying to do in God is Stranger. I'm trying to look at the unhighlighted bits in most people's Bible, the difficult bits, the strange bits. I do a whole chapter on the Psalms where David or the Psalm writer asked God to kill his enemies. You know, to dash them to pieces, they might be poisoned by the food that they're eating. And you think, you know, that's unlikely to be read out in a worship service. They're not going to make a T-shirt with that Psalm 1, and they're probably not going to sing a Hillsong song about that,
right.
Are they?
No, no.
So what about those bits?
Yeah. Chris, if you would talk a little bit about Gideon and the stranger.
Yeah. So Gideon's a great, unbelievably beautiful story, but really challenging. So, you know, Gideon is doing a good job. He's under kind of siege. The land is full of Midianites, and so he has to thresh his grain in a wine press. That's not a great place to thresh grain. There's not enough through draft. He's got to do it so he keeps out of sight so no one comes and steals the grain that he's threshing. And in the middle of that, God turns up. But he doesn't say that he's God. He comes as a stranger again. And he tells Gideon that he's a mighty warrior. And Gideon doesn't look like a mighty warrior. He looks like a guy hiding from the enemies, threshing his grain in a hole.
Uh-huh.
But he says, you know, you're a mighty warrior. And we love that bit of the story. The story is going to go well because, you know, God's in it. And, you know, Gideon defeats the Midianites with only a few men. Do you remember he had too many men? And he sends loads of them home because they didn't drink in the right way. But actually, the story does not end well. The story ends with Gideon exacting merciless revenge on his enemies. And that goes even further. He even tries to get his son to kill one of the enemies, and he won't do it. And then later it ends up with Gideon committing idolatry and leading the whole people of Israel into idolatrous sin. It's an interesting one. You know, I'm a fan of the Gideons. I love the fact I can go to a hotel and there'll be a Bible in a drawer.
Yeah.
But it's interesting they've chosen Gideon as their hero when his story does not end well at all. And I explore in the book, why is that? Why didn't it end well? What does that mean for us? And why is God so strange in his dealings with Gideon?
Mm-hmm. Christian, in some of these difficult parts of the Bible, what does God reveal about himself in the hard bits that we don't see elsewhere?
I think he reveals that he's real. So if you were constructing a God, you would probably construct a God that agrees with all of your opinions. He would have the same views as you in politics. He'd have the same views as you about how much money you should spend. He'd have the same views as you about what car you should drive. But that probably isn't the real God. That's probably a ventriloquist dummy that we've created that says what we want God to say for us. You know, I used to have a mascot that I took in with me into my exams, like a little cuddly teddy bear when I was a young man. And, you know, what was the point of that teddy bear? That teddy bear would never tell me I was, you know, out of line or I was morally wrong. It would just confirm me that I was okay. It was like a comfort blanket. Now, many of us have turned God into a comfort blanket or a mascot for our beliefs that we have already. But when we come across strange parts of the Bible, then we know we're in reality. Not a God that I've constructed, but a God that created me. And if I always agree with God, the chances are I don't really know him.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Bible says God's ways are higher than my ways. That my life and my heart, sadly still, even though I'm a Christian, I still have an inclination towards sin. And so if God always agrees with me, then God would be agreeing with sin. And that doesn't make any sense. So we live in a holy, transcendent, majestic Lord God over all creation, and he won't fit into neat boxes of my politics or my theology or my preferences. And so I like it when I meet the hard parts of the Bible, because it makes me have to re-examine what I understand of God. And rather than change God, I want to change me so that I know the God that's really there.
Mm-hmm. Krish, we've got a couple of minutes left. And do we expect God to work in predictable ways? And if we do expect God to work in predictable ways, where did we get that idea?
I kind of like predictability. You know, predictability is not a bad thing. And God's not random. He doesn't just kind of mess with our lives, just kind of mess us up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we like control. We like to be in control. And the idea that God might have different for us, have different values to us, have different agendas to us, that's complicated. And that's why it's a lot easier to cut God down to size, put him in a box, or turn him into a ventriloquist dummy, because then he never messes with us.
Right.
He never takes control of our lives. Mm-hmm. We're in control of him.
And if we don't have a God that will contradict our will, then we really don't have a God, do we?
I think that's exactly right. We haven't got a God when he can't change our will. We've got an idol.
Right.
And the Bible's got a lot to say about idols being actually one of the most basic of all sins.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am absolutely delighted to get a chance to talk to you again. And I must say, your TED Talk, which is available online, is such a moving, powerful 16 minutes that I've passed it on already to a half a dozen people. And my response has already been, oh, my goodness, thank you for sending me that.
Wonderful. It was lovely to speak with you, Bill.
Yeah.
And may God bless you and the important work you're doing.
Yeah. My guest has been Krish Kandaya. His book, God is Stranger, Finding God in Unexpected Places. I just find Krish to be not only a great mind and a great heart, but a man who and his wife who really took on something unbelievably challenging. Really, I'm so impressed. I'm so amazed. I've had him on the show before, and his book is interesting and compelling. And you know, you talk about going after the tough stuff, and he makes it very readable, very interesting. I sure enjoyed him, really a special thanks to Michael Brown, and really been a great show. Rebecca, do you have any thoughts on Krish?
Well, I think that's what's so fascinating is his whole theory about God being stranger than we understand and relating that to not just to God in our lives, but to the strangers that mm-hmm. we see, and to almost expect the unexpected when it comes to God. That's hard to do.
It is hard to do, but we're living in a day where the stranger is now everyone, and especially with immigration and all that, we're trying to figure out how we should be looking at the stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Billy Graham who so eloquently said that imitating Christ is opening up the door to friendship and just loving people where they're at and meeting their needs and being interested in meeting their needs is something that we can all strive to do much better.
Well, it sounds so simple, but it's kind of difficult to do because it requires us to literally die to ourselves, because you have to be able to put somebody else to be genuinely interested. As mm-hmm. you said, you have to see that they're there. You have to care that they're there. And many times you have to care more about them than about yourself. And that's a tricky thing, as we're caught up in our lives and we don't necessarily want the inconvenience, but
do you put the same energy into meeting the needs of others as you do into meeting your own needs? Awkward silence.
Do you? Am I supposed to answer that?
No.
Because I think we're running out of time, Bill.
Well, no. What a relief, huh? Anyway, that wraps up our show for the week. Thank you so much for listening. We just love our listeners at Faith Radio, and thank you for supporting us as well. Got the registration deadline coming up for the Writers' Convention. So there's a lot of things going on. So thank you for listening, and go to the website, myfaithradio.com. You can download any of the shows and podcasts and send them to your friends. Have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.